Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. This week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be talking to Commissioner Jean Paquette from the State of Maine Department of Labor and her Director of Communications, Julie Rabinowitz. And we're going to be talking about some new information having to do with worksite development programs, and we're going to be talking about updates and things that are happening in the Maine Department of Labor. Both thank you and welcome back.
Thank you.
You know, it's interesting. We haven't had you on since last year, so of course nothing's happened at the DOL, I'm sure. Not a single thing.
Never.
It's quiet.
It's so quiet.
So I think what would be really great is if maybe, Jean, you could start with what's new, what's happening there, what's happened over the last few months, where do you see the future, and then Julie can give us some of the detail work on that.
Sure. All right. Well, it's great to be back, and it's great to be here discussing what's new in the Department of Labor. I think what is not necessarily new, but what's been really starting to happen is that we're really making a shift in the culture. I think, David, last time I spoke with you, we were working on things that would help us to focus on both customers, the employers and the job seekers. And we believe that we have this dual focus, and we're really moving forward with lots of different things that will help to communicate to both of those customers.
That's right. Last time when you were here, we were talking about how, rather than an adversarial role where the DOL had been in the past, that you were really looking to move forward in a more of a collaboration role with the organizations that are out there from a company perspective. And so certainly you've seen it. There's no question. We're hearing it. Do you think it's going as far as you would like, or do you think there's a little more work to do, or what?
Oh, I think there's always more work to do. But yes, I think we are seeing it, and even internally in the bureaus, and the way people even speak about our customers and the focus that we have, and taking some of the functions within the Department of Labor and really making sure that the employers are looked at as customers. We've seen a decrease in complaints. We have seen a lot more problem solving with our partners and with the other state agencies. We're working together to help, for example, a partnership that we're starting right now with the Department of Health and Human Services, because the Department of Labor, being 97% federally funded with 555 employees, we are tasked with workforce development. Now, that's a term that means a lot of things to a lot of people, and there's lots of good things going on to help us get people employed. But really, the mission of the Department of Labor is helping to get job seekers and people that want to work, can work, to get employment. And I think in the department, what we've been able to do over the past few months is really start to get the public to understand that we really need all Mainers to participate in the workforce in order for our economy to turn and in order for us to be prosperous in the state of Maine.
There's no question that, you know, we're going to talk about numbers in a little bit, where the unemployment is and all that, and what the real number is and what the stated numbers are and that whole thing. We'll talk about that in a second, but I do think there is a shift coming on. I mean, I see it at CMA, Career Management. Outplacement is significantly down in terms of the layoffs, in terms of the numbers out there from big. I mean, there's plenty of 101s, 202s, but search, recruiting, staffing is way up.
Yeah.
And that's a shift we saw in probably the last 6 months or so. It really was the first time we saw a dramatic shift. It always kind of been this little malaise in staffing, a little malaise in search. Staffing picks up first, always does.
Right.
And now we're starting to see it in the search side. So I do think that we are starting to see a shift here in Maine.
Yep.
And through New England, you know, because we do it outside of Maine as well. And you are seeing a push on that.
Yeah.
Do the numbers back it up, Julie?
Yes, we started to see the unemployment rate fall every month. you know, in 2012 it was flat a lot of months, and in 2013, starting in the late spring, we started seeing it fall. And our economists are very cautious, and they would say, well, you know, next month it could go up. But consistently, it fell throughout 2013. And when we went back in February, we do what we call a benchmark, and we do a look back for 5 years and look at how that trend has been going. And when we did that look back, we have seen, instead of kind of a roller coaster and some flat lines and then it trickling down in 2013, we saw a steady decrease over particularly the last 3 years. 36 months, we saw it only go up in 1 month. The unemployment rate only went up in 1 month. It was down in 17 and flat in 18 months. So we've seen a beautiful ski slope with one little mogul in terms of unemployment. And so the trend has continued down, and we're seeing jobs pick up on our own job bank. That the state runs a job bank. We're federally mandated to do that at the department. And we're seeing those numbers tick up, so it reflects what you're seeing out in the field.
So we talk a lot about the unemployment number, and I just want to clarify a little bit, because there's a lot of talk about the people that have dropped off the unemployment rolls. So how much of that number is reflected in it? Let's have a little bit of discussion on that, because there is a difference between what the number says nationally, statewide, and so forth. So talk to me about the drop-off rate.
Right. So there are different levels of measuring unemployment. So the number that we talk about is what we call the U3 from the Federal Bureau of Labor Statistics. And that number includes people who are looking for work but are actively looking for work. So if you are not looking for work, if you decided to take a break from your job search for a couple months, then you would not be considered unemployed in that count. But what we've seen nationally is that the unemployment rate has declined largely because large numbers of people have decided to leave the workforce either for large periods of time or permanently. They've looked for disability, they've looked for welfare benefits, they've decided to take early retirement for those people who felt age discrimination and hiring kind of thing. So in Maine, the unemployment rate actually has been lowering more so because people have been getting jobs and they have continued to look for work. So they have hope that the economy is picking up and they stay out there in the job hunt.
When we're talking about income levels, and maybe you can speak to this a little bit, what are you seeing from an income level across the board? Is it decreasing, increasing, kind of flatlining in terms of what you're seeing from a DOL, Julie?
We've had a... through the recession, it's been pretty flat. We've seen some uptick recently in some federal numbers that have come out just in the past couple months or so, and that's reflecting a tightening of the job market. Here in Maine, what we do have a skills gap, and when the commissioner's talking about that need to develop that workforce, there's a segment of the population, they may live in rural areas, they may have worked, we think about manufacturing jobs, paper mills is one that comes to mind. So those are folks who have been potentially laid off, and there's not a job local to them that matches the skill set that they have. And what we're trying to do is identify the opportunities to retrain those folks through the workforce development system so that they can get employed, because places like in the healthcare industry, which hasn't lost any jobs net in the recession, continues to boom here in Maine, will continue to boom in Maine. But you can't walk out of a mill job and get a job in a hospital. So you need to retrain, you need to reskill. And then your wage level when you start there is going to be lower because you're starting at the bottom of the wage scale. So we've seen a lot of that retooling. It's reflected in the wages. As the labor market tightens, some areas are going to start seeing an increase in wages, but we still have to target those long-term unemployed.
We're talking with Jean Paquette, the Commissioner of the Department of Labor for the state of Maine, and Julie Rabinowitz, Director of Communication for the DOL. Jean, you've been talking a lot across the state about this skills gap. Mm-hmm. And where do you think that's going? Do you think there's improvements happening? What do you think that are some of the key areas that the DOL can work on and continue to work with employers to make this better?
Well, I think the first thing we have to do is talk to employers. And I don't think we do that enough. We're improving in that area as far as the overall workforce development system goes. But I also, yes, I believe that there are skills gaps for certain industries that we have here in Maine. But I also think that it's important that we look at exactly what are those skills that the employers are asking or that what they need as far as what they perceive as a skills gap and what we perceive as a skills gap. So the conversation is starting. And when you drill down, and I know you know this, David, being in the industry that you're in with CMA, when you drill down and talk to employer specifically one-on-one and you find out, is it a skills gap issue or is it a recruitment and retention issue? So the conversations vary. And I think that, yes, we do, according to the numbers, we do have a skills gap at just what Julie had said, because people are coming out of these traditional manufacturing types of jobs and we need to retool them to gain the skills that they need in order to take the jobs that are in demand.
Well, certainly technology is one of those key areas. And mm-hmm. I was up at an event up at Thomas College, I want to say it was a few weeks ago, and they were talking a lot about schools providing employers with what they really need and listening, right? Listening to what employers really need, because there is a disconnect. And we've talked about that on the show many times in terms of John Doerr's been on to talk about it and others about this disconnect between what the schools teach mm-hmm. and what the employers really need. And also being able to keep the youth here in Maine, right? And to be actually to make it a livable place for young people to stay. Mm-hmm. Now, that's macro. That's big talk. Mm-hmm. Julie, maybe what are some of the things that the DOL are really looking at to try to help correct those problems here in the state?
One thing we're looking at is apprenticeship. Another thing is industry partnership. Apprenticeship is normally thought of in the trades, but we've done a lot of work in terms of apprenticeships in healthcare, for example. And as programs might close, we've talked about some budget cuts in the colleges and the community college system and the universities. Like there's a vet tech program up at UMA in their Bangor location, which is like an RN position for veterinarians. That's an in-demand job. It pays, starting in the $13 an hour and up range. But if they end that program, that's the only program in northern New England. The next closest program is at Mount Ida in Massachusetts. So is that a candidate for apprenticeship where we can listen to the employers and look at how we can provide the classroom teaching that needs to happen on one hand with the hands-on experience? And that is taking apprenticeship out of where we would consider it, plumbing, electrician, and putting it to directly serve a need that exists in Maine. We're doing that with natural gas. We've started an apprenticeship program because as natural gas is expanding, and particularly north of Augusta, that's an opportunity to retrain some of those laid off mill workers up in Piscataquis and Penobscot and Somerset counties and make that connection so that we are retraining them for jobs that are definitely in demand and that they could then turn around later down the road and open up their own business doing natural gas installation and maintenance and things like that.
No, I think that's great. I mean, you don't traditionally hear about apprenticeship in outside of the mm-hmm. trades, and
right.
I think that's a great idea. Mm-hmm. Are you seeing a lot of traction with it? You know, how many employers are starting to think about this or use it? What's the numbers kind of looking at this point?
As far as numbers go, there's some anecdotal information that we have. You know, like Julie said, with the healthcare industry and so forth. What we've done with the State Workforce Investment Board is to have the person who in the Department of Labor that actually has had successful apprenticeship types of programs talk to the State Workforce Investment Board so that the people on that board will understand and will be starting to spread the word that we are looking at all types of industries that really could use the apprenticeship model. And right now, apprenticeship is a state program, but when I talk to my colleagues throughout the country, it really is a national and a federal Now it's becoming more of a federal desire to increase the amount of apprenticeships that we have. So who knows down the road if there'll be some federal dollars that will be coming into the state that support apprenticeship programs. But it is a way to help upskill your workforce and then have those entry-level positions, you know, freed up too as well.
I think faster. It's great. I mean, I think that's a great idea and a concept that really gets people trained, right? Right at
right.
the beginning, and mm-hmm. they can really sink their teeth into it. We're talking with Julie Rabinowitz and Jean Paquette, and you are listening to the HR Power on News Talk WLLB, and we will be right back.
They say it's never too late to be what you might have been. So if you want to turn your passion into your profession, AARP can help you find new opportunities that take advantage of Work Reimagined, a program that leverages the power of LinkedIn. AARP also provides access to tools, resources, and information that can help you at every step. Just a few of the ways AARP helps turn your goals and dreams into real possibilities.
AARP, real possibilities.
Go to aarp.org/possibilities to find tools and guidance.
Real Possibilities is a trademark of AARP.
You might hear some advice from your friends on choosing a health plan.
Darling, you must choose the gold healthcare plan.
Not the silver plan. Too much trouble. Do they have a stainless steel plan?
I like bronze, like my tan.
Are sunburns covered? Instead, take advice from a licensed agent from Northern Insurance Group. Meet face-to-face with a local healthcare exchange professional. Call Northern Insurance Group today. We have the resources to make sure you make the right choice.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And today we are talking with Jean Paquette, Commissioner with the Department of Labor here in the state of Maine. And she's brought along Julie Rabinowitz, Director of Communications for the same DOL.
Thank you
again for being on the show. All right, so the first segment, we talked a little bit about some of the numbers, the unemployment rate, what's going on, some of the trends out there. One of the areas that I really like to talk about is the Welfare to Work program. I know for a number of years now, a couple of years, you've been working with a bunch of different commissioners and trying to get the Welfare to Work program to be more effective, to be more efficient. And I think one of the things that I can say, with some of the limitations you've put on welfare for up to 60 months, with some of the things that are happening, it's kind of exciting to see that the administration and the Department of Labor is taking this seriously. Mm-hmm. So I know there's some new news out there, and I certainly think it'd be great to announce that so you know you can talk about what's going on. Mm-hmm. But first I want to say that's really good, and I'm very pleased that you guys are doing that because it really makes a stand here in Maine of what's not leaving people behind.
Right.
So, Jean, tell me a little bit about what the news is, what some of the things that happened in the last couple months, and where we're going with it.
Okay. Actually, over the last 2 years, Commissioner Mayhew, Department of Health and Human Services, and the ex-commissioner who had left, Commissioner Bowen, and I started to meet on an interagency collaboration, if you will, to help us to make sure that the people that are receiving services, specifically this program is the TANF program, Temporary Assistance for Needy Families. And those folks that are on TANF have a work component, which some people may have heard of, which is called ASPIRE. ASPIRE mm-hmm. stands for Additional Support for People in Retraining and Employment. And the people that are part of the ASPIRE program in Maine have a work requirement where they need to have experience in a workplace that will help them become employable and hopefully, as a result, get jobs and get off assistance. And Governor LePage and the whole administration is extremely supportive. In fact, it is such a passion that he pushes on us all the time to find out how we're going to help transfer people who are on these programs, these TANF programs, how we're going to transfer them into the world of work so that they feel better about themselves. You know, the best way out of poverty is getting a job. So we really don't want people to perceive this as, you know, you hear a lot about, oh, this, you know, there's this war on the poor. Well, that's that's a total opposite of what the way this governor truly feels. And it really is about us working as in partnership to help get these folks experiences so they can become competitive in the marketplace and then become self-sufficient and be able to put food on the table for their children and for them to feel good about themselves. I mean, when people are out of work for any period of time, whether they're on TANF or in the Aspire program or on unemployment, they lose confidence. So this program that we've come up with is it's called the Aspire program is actually part of what we're calling our worksite development program in the Department of Labor. And what it is we've entered into an agreement with the Department of Health and Human Services where we are actually being funded by TANF dollars to have 12 worksite development specialists in our career centers. And what that means is it's if someone comes in through the TANF door, they're immediately given a vocational assessment by the Department of Health and Human Services. Because the focus is really on the abilities of these folks, not what they can't do, but what can they do. So they have a vocational assessment, and then there is a warm handoff to the career centers. And then in the career centers, they meet with these worksite development specialists. They have conversations about what their skills are, what their limitations are as far as do they have childcare issues, things like that. It's more case management. It's wraparound services to help people get into a worksite that they can get some skills and some experience in. So really the Department of Labor, our core competency is really reaching out to the employers to say, would you help us? Would you help be partners with us and become a work site for them and to actually give them either volunteer experience or it could be paid experience. And we've set the program up now so that we are really reaching out. Right now we have 285 participating work sites, and it's nonprofit, for profit. We have 297 available work experience positions right now. So we really just started the actual placement about 2 months ago. So it's very new. People are very excited about it. But what I'd like your audience to consider is to really look into possibly becoming a work site so that everybody is participating in helping people get from welfare into work.
Julie, what are the criteria for organizations when they think about doing this? What are some of the things that they have to either do or be prepared to deal with in regards to being one of these work site?
Well, part of what they're doing is they're mentoring the worker. And the way we talk about it is you need to think about your first job and things that you might not have been familiar with. So that's what some of these Aspire people are doing, and it's experience, it's not their age. So we think of new workers and there's is teens or, you know, people in college, and you have an internship and you learn how to function in an office and how loud you can talk in a cubicle and how to use what machine and what do you, you know. But some of these people may not have worked in an office. Maybe their only job was in food service. Maybe their job was in retail. And so we're exposing them to new kinds of workplaces. We're teaching them, what do you do? If you've been out of work a long time, you might know about working and you just need self-confidence. If you've never worked in that environment, but you want to work in that environment because we're trying to match people with their desires and their vocational abilities and their skills and interests, what do they need to know? If the photocopier breaks, do you just go back to your desk and sit there? Or do you find the person who's in charge of the photocopier and let them know or ask for help? Or do you, you know, so it's those kinds of cultural norms that you learn from working that a work site would do. It's almost an internship, but it's...
I'll say it's very similar to an apprenticeship and internship. It's
right.
Very similar to that process.
Right. And they could be there for up to 26 weeks. And it's some of them are going to need more role modeling and more assistance, and some of them are going to be ready to go.
So for clarification, so they're committed to being there for 26 weeks? Or
up
how,
to. If they, to. They pick a time frame that that matches what that individual's needs are. So it's very targeted to what the individual needs, but also to what that work site needs. So that's where the career center is, the staff person is the bridge between the work site and picking and selecting the right participant for the right slots.
Okay, so let's dig a little bit into this so that there's clarity in terms of employers that may be interested in the program.
Mm-hmm.
A, do they have to pay the employee, and is there a prevailing wage they have to pay in regards to this in terms of being in the program? So they come to work for them. They're going to be working for up to 26 weeks. Are they still on the TANF program? Are they getting paid? How does that kind of work in terms of
They're
that?
On the TANF program. They may, depending upon what the task they are doing is, it might be that they're required to be paid.
Is that kind of like the intern rules?
Yeah, it's very much, it's so very similar
much like
to
the intern
rules.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So what you want to do is try to structure it so that you're giving them some skills, but they're not necessarily producing things on the front line. Like if you were a manufacturer, they cannot be actually producing product that you would sell.
Right, and they have to, it cannot benefit to that degree, the organization. Okay, I get it. So it's kind of like an intern program.
Right.
In other words, for employers to think in that time, that
exactly.
kind of works.
Okay.
So when they come on board and they're there for 4, 8, up to 26 weeks, where do they go from there? Do they then, during that time, does the Career Center help them find a job during those weeks while they're learning, or how does that work?
Well, it can be. They can, you might decide as the employer that you've already trained them. They know, you know them.
Yeah,
and you might want
sure.
them, and you may hire them, and you might be eligible for a work opportunity tax credit for hiring someone off of TANF.
You took my next question.
There you go. They may need some more training depending upon what industry they're going into. So it might be that they need to continue to get some additional work experience, so they might switch to a different employer. The way DHHS has worked it is that they get additional support and assistance as they get back into the workforce, and so they're not cut off entirely. If you do hire them, if they still need child care or transportation assistance or things like that.
But it's very supportive, though.
It is. And DHHS will set these individuals up with that back-end support while the Career Center is setting up the front-end in terms of the placement. And the Career Center is a whole team approach to this. And the Career Center worksite development specialist is there to support the employer and that participant supervisor, the official employee of the employer who's supervising the participant.
Seems like a win-win for both parties,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
You have the employer gets additional help and support. They're providing a value. Mm-hmm. We're getting people off the rolls, off the dole in terms of what their situation may have been created or something has happened in their lives and they're learning a new skill. Do you see this program expanding? Is there a limit to what the program has for a charter right now? In other words, we can only do so much. Is there no limit in Maine?
We hope that there's a limit because we hope that we decrease the number of people that need the assistance. But this is just to kind of clarify a little bit. The Aspire program requires that there be a work component. And so the federal dollars and the federal funding that comes through the TANF program for Aspire in the Department of Health and Human Services, in the past, they were not hitting their metrics for that work site, workplace experience for these folks that are in the Aspire program. They had to do something because they were facing penalties of up to $13 million from the federal government because this work component was not being satisfied. So that was really a wake-up call for the administration and for the governor and saying, you know, we've got limited resources, you know, and to lose money or to have penalties because we're not doing the component of work site development and getting people work experience, it's a double whammy. We're not getting people to work. We're getting penalties. It's costing the taxpayer dollars. And people are not feeling good about participating in society. And so, you know, it's a program that actually in lots of different states, the TANF program itself is under the workforce system, whether that's under the Department of Labor or whatever they call it in other states. But Employment and Training Administration in some states has this TANF program embedded in the Department of Labor. So it's a natural fit. And that's culturally a little different than the way it has worked in the past.
I got to tell you, it's one of the better programs that I've heard in terms of a collaboration effort between the two, because it really does solve two problems. One, it provides assistance throughout, and it trains at the same time, and it gives that skills in there. You're listening to the HR Power Hour. We're talking with Jean Paquette and Julie Rabinowitz, and we will be right back on News Talk WLLB.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. Our sponsors for today's show, AARP, taking on issues that matter. Northern Insurance Group, meeting your business, commercial, and personal insurance needs. Sheehan Finney Bass & Green, innovative approaches and practical solutions. And the law firm of Jackson Lewis, all we do is work. And we are talking again with Jean Paquette, Commissioner of the Department of Labor here in the state of Maine, and Julie Rabinowitz, Director of Communication. You know, the last segment we talked about one of the better programs I've heard in terms of collaboration between the two departments, the DOL and the DHHS, in regards to really getting people back to work and getting them the skills and really getting them trained and helping them through that program, especially when they're on the TANF program.
Right.
A little clarification, if we could, because I think it's important to understand. So in terms of the TANF program itself, first of all, if they're eligible and they are required to be on that program, do they have to be in this program as well?
Yes. So if they're on TANF, they have to have some kind of work experience. Some people are working and they just have low income so that they're on TANF because they're income eligible. There's others who were not working when they entered the program. And then those are the people who are funneled to the Aspire piece of it. And if you're in Aspire, there are a few exemptions at the federal level. If you're in your last trimester of pregnancy, if you have a disability, but actually at the Department of Labor, we have vocational rehabilitation. So we don't really see having a disability as something that precludes you from working. But there's certain There's a few specific federal exemptions. The state also has a number of exemptions, and the governor has introduced legislation in this session to remove some of those exemptions and bring them back to the federal level, because those exemptions over the past 10 years are what built up that $13 million fine. So the $13 million fine isn't just because last year we didn't meet these work requirements, but that over time, because we have so many exemptions here in Maine, not everyone is kind of forced to go out and get the work experience, and when they don't do that, they get fined. We get fined by the feds.
Jean?
Yeah, and I also just wanted to add to that as well. You know, we passed legislation last year called Employment First, which is really the bill that says that we need to start looking at, instead of exempting people from not going out and looking for work or working, but we have to look at it as if they enter into the DHHS system, that employment is the first thing we look at. And that legislation supports that. And that's why that bill did pass. And it is part of how we take people into the vocational rehabilitation areas as well. And a lot of those folks are on the TANF program as well. But employment first is stating that the employment plan has to be the first thing. It's not just about getting the benefits.
Okay. I'm going to editorialize right here, and you don't have to respond, but I really think this program should be in the unemployment areas as well. And I recognize there's federal regulations and so forth that do that. You don't have to comment. I'm just editorializing for a moment. All right. Just a point of note to the audience out there. All right. We're moving on to the next thing. So there are a couple bills that didn't pass the legislature lately that I think we should talk about. One mm-hmm. is the youth employment bill. Mm-hmm. It didn't pass. Jean, you were surprised.
Why? I was surprised. I was surprised that it didn't pass because it's a common sense bill. And it's also referred to, lots of people would recognize it being called the Miners Bill. And really what it does, it was streamlining the ability for 14 and 15-year-olds to get work permits and to allow them to work in bowling alleys and movie theaters. You know, those laws were on the books when people would use manually the pins, setting up the pins in the bowling alleys. That doesn't happen anymore, but that was one of the potential dangers, and that's why it was in the law. And then movie theaters, it was about they didn't want the kids to see, those young 14 and 15 year olds to see what was on the screen. Now they can get all those images on their phone right now, so you know it's outdated.
A little bit different.
Yeah.
A little bit different today.
And then the streamlining of the permit itself really was just saying, and we supported the amendment that said, in the superintendent's office, if the superintendent doesn't get back to you, then you. In 2 days, then you can just apply right to the Department of Labor.
That's where it got hung up. It got hung up in the schools.
Right, but the superintendents supported this bill. In fact, there were no groups that were opposed to this bill.
And teens came and testified in favor of it. Because it's only for the summer. It's about
right.
summer
it's
all, jobs.
No, it's about summer jobs. Well, yeah. I get it. Is it coming back?
The bill?
Yeah.
Not that I've heard.
Okay. Didn't know if does the governor have the idea they might want to try to bring it back next year? Or?
Well, I hope so. I really don't think it's going to go away, because now that the public really understands that we're just trying to make it easier for 14 and 15-year-olds that want to work. You know, in order to get a work permit, you have to have a job offer. And
that's
if
right.
you wait, you know, a week or 2 weeks, and it takes too long to get the process.
Move on. They'll go right
They'll
to
go,
the next
right.
one.
Right. One thing we did do, luckily, last year was we got the application online. So we're streamlining in those
great.
Ways.
It's one less trip to the superintendent's
right.
office for the parents,
right.
but you still have to go back.
Julie, the other bill is the drug bill, or commonly known as the drug bill. So explain
it.
It's a drug testing bill, but commonly known as the drug bill. So what exactly is your perception as to why it didn't pass and what some of the challenges are with it?
Well, Maine has some outliers in terms of our state drug testing policy. And it's not the federal testing policy. That's separate.
One.
But this
yeah.
is the state one. And because we're an outlier in a couple key areas, we wanted to make it easier for employers to drug test, because there's been a lot of things going on, not even medical marijuana, but like the Portland ordinance to legalize it. So you're an employer in Westbrook or Scarborough, and you have employees who think it's okay to use and come to work. And so we thought, well, we need to streamline these laws. We need to update these laws. So we looked at the law. We recognized that one area that was a hurdle to employers was the establishing of the policy, and it's
yes.
complicated.
It sure
There's a wait
is.
Time. You yep. have to have a different kind of policy for each kind of testing, mm-hmm. and if you have random testing but you want to add probable cause testing, then you have to wait 60 days. So we were going to eliminate all of that with one model policy that would be a statewide policy. and that we would keep update according to state and federal drug testing laws and standards, and work with DHHS and make sure that that policy was always up to date and always available. The other areas what we were going to do were we were going to eliminate the ban on the first instance of probable cause testing.
You know, and I don't mean to interrupt, but that's the one that when you talk to employers that have out-of-state operations,
right.
They cannot understand why.
No.
They can't understand that at all. There's no logic behind to why you cannot drug test. That's when you need to drug test.
And what you're saying to employers is if someone crashes the forklift or passes out at work, you can't drug test them, even if you have a drug testing policy,
yes,
because it's the first time that's happened. Now you have a liability walking around because
exactly
you know this person has a substance abuse problem, and
exactly
everyone's endangered, and your equipment and your facilities are at risk, but you have a drug testing policy, you can't fire them either. Maine is an at-will state. You could fire them for another reason, but you can't fire them for substance abuse.
There was the law change, I think it was last year, that made that if you had one federal employee, you could use the federal DOT drug testing. Mm-hmm. And that has been a big positive.
It is positive, but it's hard because those tests are actually more expensive.
No question.
And the feds don't want to track anyone other than who they're mandated by federal law to track. So that has been... We haven't seen the effects from that bill that we were hoping for in terms of making it easier for those employers who have those federal required drug testing
occupations. Well, I certainly know there are a number of employers who appreciate that because they are able to use a more common sense approach for incidents. Mm-hmm.
The other things that the bill sought to eliminate were the EAP program requirement for employers who had 21 or more employees, and also the requirement that employers pay for half of rehab for anyone who tested positive up to 6 months. So when that bill went to the floor, there was an amendment put on it in the committee, which basically removed the probable cause change and the EAP and rehab cost changes and just made it that we need to establish a committee to work on the model policy. So we're going to go forward with trying to make changes to the model policy and bring at least that part up to date. But we definitely think that we're the only state that has the probable cause first instance ban. And we're also the only state with the EAP and the rehab payment requirement. So
you're preaching to the choir. I'm telling you, all the employers we work with, they just shake their heads. They don't understand that at all. Mm-hmm. Are there any regulatory changes you can make to make it easier that are outside of having to go to the legislature for it? Are there any,
rules
that you could make?
We've looked at the rules. We do that on an ongoing basis with all of our regulations. At this point, it was legislation that's needed.
You've exhausted all the rules.
What I figured you were going to say. But come right back to the HR Power Hour, where we're going to be talking to Gene and Julie about some interesting stuff when we're right back on News Talk WLLB. The HR Power Hour is proud to announce a brand new national sponsor, Sheehan Finney Bass & Green. Sheehan Finney Bass & Green is a full-service business law firm representing local, national, and international clients with innovative approaches and practical solutions. Founded in 1937, Sheehan Finney has grown to 63 attorneys with 4 offices throughout New Hampshire and Massachusetts and is known for professional excellence, practical counsel, and committed to both its clients and the communities it serves. The firm's labor, employment, and employee benefits group represents private and public sector clients throughout New England. Their attorneys are experienced in all aspects of employment law, labor relations, and employee benefits, and assist employers in effectively navigating a wide range of complex workplace issues. They've been consistently recognized as outstanding in their field by New England Super Lawyers, Woodward White Best Lawyers in America, Chambers USA, and Business New Hampshire Magazine. So welcome, Sheehan Finney Bass & Green, to the HR Power Hour family.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. We've been having a fantastic discussion with the Commissioner for the Department of Labor for the state of Maine, G. Perkett, and also Julie Rabanowitz, Director of Communication. You know, we've had a great discussion on some new programs, especially really excited about the Aspire program. I think that is really exciting things, and I'm glad people are going door to door to talk to employers about this. Mm-hmm. Let me just right now say, where can they go and get information on it directly if employers are interested?
They can go to the Career Center, contact their local Career Center. There's 12 across the state. They can also go to our website, which is maine.gov/labor/BES/aspire.
And right after this show on the HRPowerHour.com, we will make sure we put that link so somebody could go right to the HRPowerHour.com website and they can click right to it. Because I'm sure they're going to be writing in the car ///. And we know that's never going to happen.
No.
Never
going to happen. That's one of our shorter addresses.
I'm sure it is. So what I'd like to do is give Gene and you an opportunity to kind of talk about some of the other things that are happening at the DOL, some things you want to get out for information. You can kind of go right through the list of them. I'll certainly make some comments on it. And then we'll wrap it up at the end here and have a final statement. So what's going on? What would you like to talk a little bit about?
Oh, boy. We need another hour. Can we have another
hour?
No
problem. We can do that. We set that up later in the year. You got it.
Okay, good. I just want to say that, you know, my background is human resources. And so this is near and dear to my heart to be able to reach out to your audience. So I want to thank you for this opportunity. I also would love to hear from any of the HR folks out there. If there's feedback that they would like to give us, they can contact us. And we are really trying to get things and best practices out there to help employers become mm-hmm. good employers. And one of the things that I believe is a very strong part of the Department of Labor is our Safety Works program. And our Safety Works program is one where it is a voluntary, you can call and get a voluntary consultation. And the consultants will come into your workplace and they will look to make sure that you have a safe working environment. And one of the ways that we recognize these employers that go through a rigorous consultative process with our consultants is that there's a SHARP award for the private sector. It's called SHAPE for the public sector. But for the private sector, we have now 66 SHARP recipients. These are companies that go above and beyond for safety. And what happens is when they go through this process and they're designated a SHARP company, they get a big banner, they get a plaque, there's a ceremonial type of process that the companies can go through. But what it does is it sends the message that they're a safe employer, they care about their employees. And that's a great recruiting tool.
No, it's a
and
great.
People don't think about that as, you know, I am a SHARP recipient. So I encourage people to find out more about what this program is. And it also puts you down on the list for OSHA inspections for 2 years.
You get exempted.
You get exempt if you get
designated. Did you hear that, everyone? Exemptions. Yeah. Love that.
Right. So it's not only a good thing and a right thing to do, it will help you to avoid an OSHA inspection as long as there has not been any complaints or things like that.
You know, I've met a lot of the people at SafetyWorks. Some of them are at the conferences I go to. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, they're some of the nicest and professional people. And, you know, I know a lot of employers sometimes think that, you know, hey, if I let them in, they might see something and, oh, my God, this isn't how it works.
No, it's entirely confidential when they do these consults.
That's
it's
right.
Very different than the OSHA inspection. And for the private sector, it would be OSHA, not our department. So we come in and we check you out and we tell you what you got to fix. Now, if you have a big problem, we're going to tell you you got to fix this right away.
Well, of course.
But it's you reduce your workers' comp rates. We've had a couple towns under the SHAPE program put all the municipal facilities fall under SHAPE, and Brunswick is one of them, and they saw their workers' comp rates go down 16%.
Wow, that's huge.
Yeah.
It's huge. So I know you wanted to talk a little about unemployment, Julie.
Yes, we have had a change in the unemployment. There was a law passed in 2012 that changed the number of weeks from which you would not be liable for an employee's unemployment charges. It went from 5 weeks to six, and then we kind of monitored that and were asked to report back to LCRED. And what we didn't really see a huge effect from those from that change in terms of employees having their unemployment experience rating charged to the previous employer. When we reported to LCRED, they chose to take no action, so the original legislation actually sunsetted. So we have reverted back and that charge back to pre-2012.
Okay.
And
Jean?
Speaking of unemployment, I just want to say that I'm sure that all the employers listening out there have gotten their tax bills. But one of the things that this administration worked really, really hard over the past 3 years and three plus years is really working on the whole tax structure and the unemployment tax rate, and making sure that, you know, we can say that we were able to save employers $30 million because we went down two schedules this past year. So
that's huge.
It is huge. Yeah. So the unemployment tax rate for the state of Maine saved the employers $30 million this year. We put out a big press release about that. It didn't get picked up very wide circles. But I think it's important that people need to know that this administration is working hard to save every bit of taxes.
We
possible.
Promise we will not cut that from the tape. We
Thank
promise.
You.
Okay. Julie, anything else you would like to quickly get off? And then I'd like the commissioner to just have the last word.
We have a new employer newsletter. It's actually been about a year old, and you can sign up for that on our website. So you can keep up to date with these changes, maine.gov/labor.
That one we will also put on the website. Right, Deb? We can make mm-hmm. that happen, our producer. Commissioner, last word, a couple of 30 seconds here.
Okay. Like I said, I would like to thank David Chulo and Julie for being here today. And I have to say that for all the HR folks out there and the businesses out there, keep doing the right thing, keep fighting the good fight, and we will prevail. So thank you very much, and I look forward to coming back.
Oh, and we will have you back. Thank you both for being on the show today. Certainly,
thank you.
You can see the commissioner up at the HR convention, going to be at the Samoset there in Maine, which is actually the first week of Maine, and they're a sponsor, the New England Law mm-hmm. Publishers, so we have to make sure we say that. It's very important, yeah. But there's going to be over 800 HR professionals there every day, so it's a great, great event. And now the HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Northern Insurance Group. Licensed agents in 28 states, business, commercial, and personal. Go to northerninsurancegroup.com. Special guest today, Julie Rubenowitz from the Maine Department of Labor. Julie, what's the tip?
The tip is that in May, the Maine Department of Labor is going to have videos about your unemployment tips for employers and also about your appeals hearings. So make sure that you tune in and watch those so that you know how to save money on your experience rating and also how to prepare for an appeal.
And the website is?
maine.gov/labor.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Northern Insurance Group at northerninsurancegroup.com. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.